get my shoes and out the door. 5, I'm alive. 6, 7, 8, feeling great.
Hello, BYWG Tribe. This is Dr. Noah. We wanted to make you aware of our carefully selected product of the month and book of the month for January 2018. Keep in mind, all the links and discount codes for the book and products will be listed in the show notes in iTunes and on our website at www.beyondyourwildestgenes.com at the Listen Now tab. Our book of the month is Beyond the Mat: Achieve Focus, Presence, and Enlightened Leadership Through the Principles and Practice of Yoga by Julie Rosenberg, MD. Our product of the month is Swanee's, our favorite and most stylish blue light blocking glasses for better sleep. Both Julie Rosenberg, discussing her book, and James Swanwick, discussing better sleep, can be heard on the Beyond Your Wildest Genes podcast archives.
Buddy, welcome back to the Beyond Your Wildest Genes podcast. I am your co-host today, Dr. Mike Akinfora, and I'm thrilled to have with me Dr. Mona Morstein. Mona, how are you?
Hi, I'm fine. Thanks for having me, Mike.
It is so great to be able to talk to you. Dr. Morstein wrote a fantastic book, and she's going to talk about it today, and I'm just loving that I get to share it with you guys. The name of the book is Master Your Diabetes, a comprehensive integrative approach for both type 1 and type 2 diabetes. It's by Chelsea Green Publishing, and it came out a little while ago, very shortly. So we're going to get into this, and I'm going to read Dr. Morstein's bio. Dr. Mona Morstein is a naturopathic physician with a medical practice focused in integrative diabetes treatment. Her clinic, Arizona Integrative Medical Solutions, is located in Tempe, Arizona, where she sees patients of all ages and genders for acute and chronic conditions. An expert on prediabetes and diabetes, she's a frequent lecturer at conferences and webinars and is the founder and executive director of the Low Carb Diabetes Association. Dr. Morstein is also a member of the Arizona Diabetes Coalition. Her book, as I mentioned earlier, is The Master Your Diabetes, a comprehensive integrative approach for both type 1 and type 2 diabetes. Dr. Mona, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So the first question we ask folks is, tell us your journey. How did you get here? How did you come up with writing a book? What got you into practice? And don't leave any of the good details out.
Well, you know, I think a lot of physicians who get into naturopathic or integrative care, a lot of us were ill ourselves at some point, and it was a change in our diet or a homeopathic remedy or botanicals that enabled us to return to health and got us in that mindset of using integrative care as not just for our own health, but also as a way to help other people also return to health. And as I got into diabetes because I was a very new physician in private practice in Montana. And to be honest, I actually missed my first acute onset type 2 diabetic patient. And so that was a real shake to my confidence and my ego, and not in regards to like, oh, how could I miss this, but more along the lines of, am I a safe and responsible physician? Should I, you know, stay in medicine? I'm taking people to care for them. Is this what I should be doing? Am I safe to do this? And it was a huge crisis of conscience for me, and I decided that I did want to stay in medicine, and two, I wanted to make sure I never missed another diabetic patient. And so I called up Dr. Richard Bernstein, who wrote the book Dr. Bernstein's Diabetes Solution, and I actually went to his clinic and worked with him, and then came back to Montana and set about learning everything I could about diabetes to make sure, you know, I would never make that mistake again. And here I am some years later, feeling pretty confident now about my knowledge of diabetes.
That's fantastic. And I appreciate you taking the time to talk about this with our audience. And so I really just want to start in the beginning. Tell folks Diabetes right now is an epidemic. How big of a problem is this?
It's huge, and it's huge in America, and it's huge globally. Right now, the statistics are about 30 million people with diabetes, and about 90 million, people with pre-diabetes, which really right now, one out of every three people in America has pre-diabetes or diabetes, pretty much.
Dr. Mona,
With
say
all,
that. Hold on. Say that again.
yeah,
Say that again. How many?
one, it's this, if we say, if we're saying there's about 110 to 120 million people that either have pre-diabetes or diabetes in the U.S., that winds up being one out of every three.
Wow.
For seniors, for those 65 and above, one out of every four is a diabetic patient.
Wow. Oh my.
And where it costs the country about $170 billion in 2007, it's now up to around $250 billion economic costs a year, and not in hardly a decade. So this is it's really a huge crisis. They say by 2030, potentially 1 billion people worldwide will have prediabetes or diabetes. So it is an epidemic, and not just for health, but of course certainly for health, but also for economies. How can affording to deal with people, especially if they're taking on just conventional care, which unfortunately has a bad track record for controlling diabetes and preventing complications. So, it's a dour future if we just maintain what we're doing.
Yeah, those numbers are astounding.
Yeah.
They're hard to really wrap your brain around it. 170 billion with a B per year.
Well, that was that's it's up to 245 billion a year now economically in the last records that they did,
Wow.
which was around 2012 or 13. Yeah.
Wow. All right. So
Yeah.
in your book, you bring up the Eight Essentials plan. Could you
Yeah.
describe what that is?
Well, we're talking about, we're talking about ways to help prevent and then help to treat all different, diabetes, and looking at what are etiological reasons that people are developing this condition. And so what we look at through science is the Eight Essentials treatment protocol relies on a low carb whole foods diet, because if we have a one sentence definition of diabetes, Mike, it said these people have lost the metabolic capacity to process carbohydrates, whether they don't make enough insulin, which is what we see in type 1, or they make insulin, but their body cells don't respond to it. That plays out that carbohydrates are poorly managed and will raise their blood sugar. And then when they get into body cells, they'll cause disease. So we need to then start off with a low carb whole foods diet. So that's the first essential. The second is exercise. And there's really several different ways that we mean exercise, both aerobic and then resistance, and then making sure people do agility and flexibility and balance. And then the last is just not sitting around all the time, just, parking your car further and walking, and just daily activities of not sitting down. The third essential is sleep. And sleep is there are it's amazing how vital sleep is to to maintain your get an appetite, to not crave carbs, to not gain weight, to not develop cardiovascular disease. It's so important. And Americans can have really terrible sleep hygiene and bad sleep as a whole. The fourth is stress management. And stress management is an arrow that goes both ways, because stress, poorly managed stress, can raise the blood sugar and cause emotional eating and different factors that can either lead to or aggravate diabetes. But diabetes itself is a very stressful condition that can, you know, lead people to feeling more stressed. So we have to work on that with patients. The fifth essential is healing the gut and the microbiome, because what's going on in the gut has so much to say about how the systemic body is reacting in so many different ways, including diabetes. The sixth essential is environmental detoxification. Because really, when we look at it, the toxicity of environmental chemicals is a huge scientific association with insulin resistance, obesity, and diabetes. So we have to teach people not just how to keep these toxins out of their own bodies, but also how to detox them out of their bodies. And the seventh essential is supplementation. And the eighth then is medication. So those are the eight essentials.
Awesome. All right. So let's, the very first thing that you spoke about is low carb whole food. Let's get into that, because you spend a lot of time on this in the book. So why do you think so few people receive dietary counseling from their medical doctors or seek help from a professional nutritionist when diagnosed with diabetes or prediabetes?
Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, I've had patients that want nutrition counseling and don't wind up getting it from a conventional care office. I'm not really sure why it's not a part, except in conventional care, you know, drugs and surgery seem to be the paradigms of care. And not so much, you know, nutrition, and certainly not supplementation and so forth. The problem is also is that when patients will come to me and they've gone to a nutrition counselor who followed the ADA plan and the American Diabetes Association plan, although on their website they'll talk about different diets that are used, their basic plan is still a fairly, you know, it's a high carbohydrate diet and high carbohydrate snack. So, you know, patients will say, well, I went to a nutrition counselor who told me to eat oatmeal for breakfast because it's low fat, you know, and that's the key to not get cardiovascular disease. But then they realize that after they have their oatmeal, their blood sugar, you know, goes up to 240, you know. I can't speak for why conventional care, you know, is not embracing what science is clearly showing, the foundational diet for people who cannot process carbohydrates metabolically in their body well. You know, but it is something that is still in along the lines of mostly being found in physicians who look at things outside the box a little, and naturopathic or integrative. And also, I think one other thing is that our practices are set up to spend a lot more time with patients than conventional care. So, you know, my first office visit, for example, is an hour and a half. You know, I mean, not to be crude, but that's probably how long people are waiting in the waiting room to get their 8-minute visit with their doctor.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So, you know, when I have time to spend with patients, and this is my priority, I can really spend time, you know, on the diet and explaining it to patients, educating them, and then making them excited and motivated, you know, about making these changes.
Absolutely. Tell me, what's the difference, or can you tell the audience the difference between like a low carb diet versus a high fiber, whole grain, vegan diet, and how can each be beneficial?
Well, you know, there is, so that's a good question. There has been studies done on what's called an MAPI2 diet. And this diet was, there was a couple of studies done where these men who had uncontrolled diabetes in certain countries, I know Cuba was one, and there was a few countries where they were studied. They were put on what we could best describe as kind of a macrobiotic diet that was actually high in grains, some beans. There was very little oil. None of it was cooked. You know, they had, I mean, it was, you know, it was what we would call the antithesis of a low-carb diet. And yet these men, and it wasn't low-calorie either. They were getting well over 2,000 calories, and they did fantastic. They lost weight. Their blood sugars got under control. Their lipids got under control. Their A1C went down. These results were just what we would want to see. And so there is, you know, we can consider this diet an outlier, but it was very strict. It was strictly vegetarian, very little protein in reality. The meals were all prepared for the men. They didn't have to cook them themselves. So if a patient, you know, and you have proponents of this in our country who say, no, we shouldn't do, you know, a low carb, you know, higher protein, higher fat. We should do this kind of diet. And it does look that for some people, it can be successful if they are really 100% strict. And also perhaps their genetics will allow them to have that kind of diet and, you know, have it be successful in their body. But for many, many people, it is not going to work. We have patients where, you know, it's just going to be a problem for them to eat, to follow it, to have their blood sugars get under control. And so the low-carb diet is, you know, seems to work for everybody and may also be obviously easier for people in America to live with their families and socialize. And, you know, there's so many aspects to food, you know, aside from just sitting down and eating it. But, you know, our lives are about food and socializing and eating. And so we have to make sure we can get meals that people can incorporate into their lives to the best degree as possible.
I agree with you 100% on that. Talk to me about what would you say is the best way to exercise to lower your glucose and lose weight?
Probably the best way to exercise to lower glucose and weight is resistance, is using your muscles with weights and, you know, whether you're, you know, whether you're doing lifting weights or squats, calisthenics, sit-ups, push-ups, where you're isolating a muscle and making it move and contract, because muscles are the number one aspect of our body that burn glucose. Yep. So when we're engaging it specifically, it's gonna. I read once a study showing that resistance can burn 19 times the glucose of aerobic exercise.
Wow.
Not that aerobic is not beneficial, and certainly for cardiovascular health and circulation, there's, you know, and also weight loss, there's definitely benefits to it. But if people just had 20 minutes and they were going to, you know, taking weights and lifting them up and using that is more effective for lowering your glucose.
I love that. That's fantastic. It is a spot on. And let me ask you another question, and I'm just working my way through the eight essentials because I think they're so important, and I want people to get a good feel and understanding to what you're talking about, because I believe what you've written really is a comprehensive look at diabetes, and this is why I want people to just get a better understanding of it. One of the things that you talked about and you wrote about was healing your gut. So can you talk about the role of your gut and the microbiome in managing diabetes?
Yeah. Now, you know, so, you know, the gut plays into both type 1, the autoimmune diabetes that we see in young kids, in our pediatric population, but also later in adults, and type 2, the insulin resistant, generally abdominally overweight, you know, patients, even though there are some lean ones as well. So they did studies. What they can pick up antibodies showing risk of developing type 1 diabetes before the child actually really, as we would, you know, comes down with it. And those kids with the elevated antibodies, oftentimes they see have what's called a leaky gut, or intestinal permeability, with the concern that as a result of that, certain virus, enteroviruses, Coxsackie B viruses, actually go through this leaky gut and go to the pancreas and cause damage and initiate a type 1 situation. So, you know, even for kids, looking at the gut is important, or for type 1 adults. For type 2, the gut is fascinating. You know, the microbiome is a collection of bacteria and viruses and kind of old cells called archive that make up our gut. And we have many more bacteria in our intestine, than we have cells making up the rest of our body. And if these get out of balance, they can do a lot of problematic things. They can cause us to absorb too many calories from our food, which sounds weird. But if you're eating an apple, which is, say, 60 calories, your body really maybe only needs 30 from them. And that's all it absorbs. But if you've gotten a changed microbiome, it may now be absorbing 59 calories, which if you're not burning off, is going to make it easier for you to gain weight. They can also decrease the amount of nutrients made and absorbed. They can decrease the amount of antioxidants made and absorbed. They can produce inflammation chemicals that go into the body, go to the cells, and make them insulin resistant. This can all be coming from the gastrointestinal microbiome. And most of us have a screwed up microbiome because we've had antibiotics and we ate foods that had genetic modified organisms in them. And we had food poisoning. And we take, you know, do you know every time you take what we call an NSAID, such as ibuprofen or aspirin or naproxen, it causes leaky gut and inflammation within a half hour of taking it. And people pop these daily as safe because you got a little sore shoulder, a little sore knee, and, you know, we eat badly, we drink badly. You know, there are many reasons our guts are not really healthy. And that can go systemically. It can even help make us more anxious or depressed, which we may treat by having this little snack or that little, you know, sugary thing. It's amazing how the whole body is connected. And sometimes we don't even know what's driving us in certain ways.
Wow. People, you need to re-listen to that. Really important information. Thank you for that. So talk to me about why sleep is so important in regulating your blood sugar.
You know, they did. So our government did this study, a national health study that showed for people who got less than 5 hours of sleep a night, they had, and this is almost unbelievable, a 235% increased risk of becoming obese.
Wow.
It's amazing to think about. I mean, that's not like just a 10% increase risk. Like, you know, that's 235%. That's a lot. And so what we know about sleep is that if we're not getting good, you know, replenishing, nourishing sleep, it changes certain hormones. The hormone that tells us we're full, we're done, that is decreased. The hormone that says I'm hungry, I want to eat carbohydrates, that's increased. And so when we look at people, you know, we're thinking, you know, I never look at a patient and I think, oh, you know, you don't have any willpower, because appetite is driven by physiology and hormones and chemicals. And if things aren't in balance, it can really make a difference on us, on us being led to either eat more or eat less, or want to eat a lot of carbs, or just happy with that salmon and broccoli. And so lack of sleep can also raise cortisol, and cortisol can raise our blood sugar and also make us feel stressed out. So obstructive sleep apnea is a disease where people stop breathing, you know, for short moments during their rest, during their sleep. And that in and of itself is associated with weight gain, diabetes, and cardiovascular disease. So and as the more you get overweight and snore, that's a combination. If someone comes to me and they're overweight and they snore, you pretty much want to check for a sleep study and see if they have obstructive sleep apnea, because that needs to be treated if they have it, or it's a huge roadblock to getting glucose and appetite and energy under control. So, and Americans do have terrible sleep habits. And so we've got to kind of walk through, you know, when to turn lights down in your house. And yeah, maybe it's not helpful getting home from a stressful day of work and then turning, you know, the news on and then watching some violent police TV show, you know, where some woman is, God forbid, you know, attacked or killed, and they have to, and then you go to bed and think, I should sleep fine. Or you're on, you know, like, why am I not falling asleep easy? Or of course, everybody just staying up on their computers or cell phones, getting that blue light that those emit that is stimulatory to your brain and prevents it from getting into a rest phase easily. So we've got all kind of, ways we have to work with. I have to work with patients to teach them, you know, how do we bring sleep and good nourishing sleep into our lives consistently? And then that's a very good way to help get their diabetes under control.
Let's talk about environmental chemicals and the relationship between obesity and diabetes, and what are some of the ways, the simple ways that people can remove some of these chemicals from their environment?
Yeah, you know, environmental chemicals scientifically are so much more, are so associated now with both becoming overweight and insulin resistance and diabetic. In fact, the World Health Organization, you know, not some shoddy, you know, organization, they even write that arsenic, lead, these can cause type 2 diabetes. And, you know, they did a great study, Mike. I think this is the one that we focus on the most. They had two groups of obese patients, and one had diabetes and one did not. And when they went through everything, you know, trying to find the difference, what they found that was so striking is that in the patients who had diabetes, they had an immense more amount of toxic chemicals in their cells than the patients who did not have diabetes. And we're seeing that these persistent organic pollutants actually damage the pancreas. They cause the cells to become insulin resistant and are now being termed obesogens and diabetogens, you know, as causing that, just like we say tobacco smoke is a carcinogen, right? So it's a huge problem given the amount of, thousands and thousands of tons of these chemicals dumped, you know, all over our land every year, right?
Oh, yeah.
Now, in terms of some simple ways to get these out of one's home, one is never have any fragrance of any, not necessarily maybe your perfume, but don't like a fragrance, like a dryer sheet or your trash bag has fragrance in it, or you're plugging something into your wall with fragrance, or you're spraying some spray of fragrance. Those are some of the most toxic chemicals that we need to avoid. We also need to avoid cooking in and storing our food and water in plastics. So we can't, we shouldn't do anything like that. I'll ask every one of my patients if they have an exterminator come to their house. And, you know, worse if they spray inside the house, which should never, ever be done. And, and then just what do they use for their cleaning products or toiletries? What kind of, we also want to check, you know, did they, if they're going to fix their house, are they going to get, green flooring, or are they going to get paint with no VOCs? All these ways that chemicals get into our body, as well as, of course, the most obviously, trying to fit as much organic food into one's, food budget. So these are, these are some common ways to just avoid bringing these into one's life.
Wonderful. I'm Dr. Mona. I'm really cognizant of your time. Do you have time for a couple more questions?
Absolutely. Thank
Wonderful.
You.
Wonderful. So, how does and this is a big one, along with sleep. I think these are really key to addressing. The way our society is living, but we need more sleep. And then how does stress affect diabetes?
Well, stress actually, I will say this, when they did a good study where they did stress management with people with diabetes, and they were able to lower their A1C. Now, the A1C is a blood work that is used to measure in the last 3 months how well was your blood sugar managed. And just by doing stress management, they were able to lower the A1C 0.5%, which is as good as what some medications can do. So stress can raise the blood sugar. It can raise the A1C. It can cause, mood changes. It can cause stressful eating. It can lower the energy. It can make people lose their motivation for being able to get some exercise or this or that. It can certainly interfere with sleep. So there's so many different ways it can play out in a person's life. That we really need to understand with each person, how is work? How is your primary relationship? What is happening in your life that could be throwing you off of having, a calm and peaceful mind? And then, you know, how do we work together to initiate? There's many different ways of doing stress management, from, you know, things like homeopathy, but also whether people do want to exercise, or they want to paint, or they want to journal, or they want to meditate, or they want to pray. We just need to work within each individual and find the best ways that stress management will work for them, and that they can incorporate into their lives to reset their mind and not have stress be this constant negative existence they have in their life. And also, the good thing is, when we put them on the low-carb diet and we get them extra this and we do supplementation, when we initiate the eight essentials, their blood sugars and their control get so much better that a lot of the diabetes stress, you know, it's very stressful if you're going to a doctor and he says your A1C is 8.0, which is a bad, out-of-control, you know, one, which is going to develop some complications. And, you know, you're doing what they said and eating that oatmeal, and, you know, why isn't it working? That is really difficult for people to feel they're failing on a protocol when they're trying. And so when we just switch them to a protocol that, when they're sticking with it, is successful, and they see those great numbers coming down, and it's just a whole different mindset for them.
It is. It's dramatic. I actually have a friend of mine who started a low carbohydrate diet in September, October, November, December. He's lost 70 pounds, and his A1C went from 11.9 to 6.
Yep.
It's dramatic. So what would you say is your A1C goal with patients? And tell everybody what an A1C is for those people who don't know it.
I mean, an A1C is what we're measuring with an A1C is how many we have a red blood cell. Red blood cells last about 3 months in our body. And they have these little proteins on them that we call A1C. And these get covered, a percentage of these can get covered by glucose. And so the A1C is the percentage of these A1C proteins covered with glucose. Whether you have 5% of them covered with glucose, or 6, or 7, or 8, it doesn't seem like it's much, you know, just going up a percentage. But the translation of where your blood sugar is dramatically different from having an A1C of 5, which means on average your blood sugar was like 100. Maybe you woke at 80 and you went to, and you know, after a meal it got up to 118 or so, versus an A1C of 8, which means on average your blood sugar is 200. You know, so you wake and it's 150 and you eat and it's 250. These are big differences, right?
Oh yeah.
And so an A1C, So I'm sorry. I honestly.
What would you say is a? You're so passionate that you got caught up in the. What would you say is your A1C goal with patients?
Oh yes, right. So here's the deal: the American Diabetes Association says they want an A1C of, you know, ideally, you know, at least 7, ideally less than 6.5, if it doesn't come by too much hypoglycemia. The American Academy of Clinical Endocrinologists, which is the organization for our endocrinologists, says, well, it should be 6.5 or less, but not due to hypoglycemia. And the reason they say that is because if you're having people eat oatmeal for breakfast, the only way you're going to be trying to get that blood sugar down is through more and more and more medication. And that medication is going to be causing hypoglycemia. In fact, there's 300,000 visits to the ER a year from diabetic patients having hypoglycemic reactions, which everybody hates. So However, the problem is that the A1C starts causing damage, it appears, in our body. In other words, if the A1C is above 5.5, it looks like we're going to start, scientifically by studies, having damage to the body. Now, the problem with that, of course, is that we don't even say someone is pre-diabetic until their A1C is 5.7. So this is why when people with type 2 diabetes are diagnosed and the A1C for diagnosis is 6.5, they already usually have some complications. They already maybe have some neuropathy. They may have some eye problems. They probably already have hypertension. They, you know, all because for all of these years they were pre-diabetic, and we're just going to wait and see, they're developing damage. So for me, an A1C, my goal would be 6.0 or below. And now I don't really worry about having hypoglycemia, because my patients are doing it, they're not eating a high carb, you know, diet that we're hammering to down with more and more medication, you know. So it's, in fact, I just had a patient, she read my book, she was taking 70 units of insulin a day and having high A1C. Read my book, went on a low-carb diet. In 1 week, she's down to 46 units of insulin with much better glucose. And 2 weeks later, she's down to 20 units of insulin with much better glucose than she had when she was eating high-carb and trying to chase it down with more and more insulin.
Yeah.
Can you believe that, right? You know,
amazing.
It's amazing. So, you know, we need to get now, even though, and then when we add in the supplements, which are, we always want to put.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
Right out of my mouth.
All right. So tell me, what are the benefits of using supplements with diabetic patients? And then tell me, what are some of your favorite supplements for diabetic patients?
You betcha. So the benefits for diabetes with supplements are many. For one thing, most diabetic patients have some nutrient deficiencies, so we can replenish those. Supplementation can help both with glucose and insulin regulation. They can also be used to help with hypertension. They can be helped with, you know, lipids. They can help with mood and energy. They can also help in treating and, well, preventing and treating diabetic complications as well. And they are very, very strong antioxidants. And diabetic damage happens when glucose is too high. And this glucose will get into four main cells or areas of our body, which are our eyes, our kidneys, our nerves, and the lining of our blood vessels. And this is because those are the cells that they don't get insulin resistant. And so if your blood sugar is 300, it's 300 in your eyes. It's 300 in your kidneys. And so these are the four areas where we develop diabetic complications. But it happens through oxidative damage. And so if we're bringing the blood sugar down and we're giving the patients antioxidants, right?
Yep.
Then we are protecting them against that oxidative damage and helping to heal the cells that did have oxidative damage. So it's, you know, so there's many, many reasons. Also cravings. Antioxidants or our supplements can help decrease cravings for carbs. One herb, Gymnema sylvestre, which is one of my favorite ones, has been shown to help, it looks like, regenerate some pancreatic beta cells. So there's, you know, there's a huge amount of good scientific literature with using these supplements. Now, my favorite ones, I think all diabetic patients should be on a very good multiple, not like a one a day, and also on a good amount of fish oils. I also then, look, I mean, I don't know, for diabetes, I have a proprietary product. I don't know if you want me to mention it or not. I don't want to overstep my bounds, but,
go right
you know,
ahead.
Definitely,
Oh. What do you got?
Okay, so
shoot.
There's I have a product called Diamend, D-I-A-M-E-N-D, from Priority One Supplements.
Okay.
That is I created because we need to have supplements at therapeutic dosing that do what we are want them to do. And so but if people are just going to be, you know, just getting this or that, you know, we do a little extra zinc and chromium and vanadium. These are the minerals that are key for helping to produce insulin and have our cells react to it. Alpha lipoic acid is a main antioxidant I want all diabetic patients on. It reduces insulin sensitivity and protects all those cells that can be damaged. I mentioned gymnema. Berberine, you know, great studies showing that the berberine was equal to metformin, which is the main entry drug. Not that I'm against metformin. It's actually not a bad drug, and it's cheap. But if we're, you know, but berberine is a good herb that really works at stimulating energy use by the cells and reducing insulin resistance, protecting the liver as well. We're looking at other aspects such as curcumin, a very good anti-inflammatory and antioxidant. There, a bilberry protects the eyes. You know, NAC is N-acetylcysteine, also reduces insulin resistance and protects the body. So, you know, we've got a number of different of my key favorites. And, of course, other supplements that individuals might need, like we're going to be checking their vitamin D. You know, do they need extra vitamin D or any other supplement that each individual patient may themselves require?
Sure. You have a nonprofit called the Low Carb Diabetes Association. Can you talk to our audience a little bit about that?
Sure. It, you know, there, I and another doc or two got a little frustrated with the American Diabetes Association and decided to form the Low Carb Diabetes Association at lowcarbdiabetes.org. And, you know, it's an education nonprofit where we're trying to disseminate information on using integrative medicine, the eight essentials, to people with prediabetes and diabetes. And, you know, it's a kind of a new, you know, it's new. We've got some videos up there and interviews, and we send out a newsletter, and we're hoping one day we get a little more sponsorship and can start putting on, you know, more projects such as education days or conferences or so forth. So we have a lot of plans, but are just kind of starting out. But it's a nice website. There's a forum where people can chat with themselves. And, you know, we hope over time it grows into its own entity.
Wonderful. Dr. Mona, I am so thankful that you've been on the show today. Where can people find you in the world?
Oh, thank you. They can find me, my clinic, Arizona Integrative Medical Solutions, as you gracefully mentioned at the beginning, is the website is a little awkward, but it's azimsolutions.com. In Tempe, we're in Tempe, Arizona, azimsolutions.com, I guess is the best way. I mean, 480-284-8155 so that's where they can find me.
And
the book is on Amazon. It's a bestseller there on, I think it's a bestseller on type 2 diabetes there. Master Your Diabetes with Mona Morstein. Thank you.
You got it. And just tell people again the website for the nonprofit?
Oh, thank you. That's lowcarbdiabetes.org.
And last thing is the supplement's name?
Is Diamend, D-I-A-M-E-N-D, from Priority One. But it's mostly, you know, sold to integrative physicians.
Gotcha.
To prescribe properly to their patients.
All right.
So ask your physician to carry it.
Wonderful. All of this, folks, will be in the show notes. Dr. Vona, it was a pleasure talking to you tonight. I really, again, want to thank you for your time. The book, folks, is Master Your Diabetes, A Comprehensive Integrative Approach for Both Type 1 and Type 2 Diabetes. It is on Amazon. It'll be in the show notes as well. Again, thank you. And do us a favor, folks, if you like what you heard, please leave a review. It helps us to help others with this vital information. So, Dr. Mona, on behalf of my partners, Dr. Wanda Lee and Dr. Noah, we thank you and have a great night. Ciao, everybody.
Thank you so much.